Again, it's good to see you here tonight or this afternoon. The weather has gotten a little sunnier out. I like that. It makes me feel a little chipper. It's good that you've made decision to be here with us for those in person. And I know there may be a few joining us online. Just for a few minutes this afternoon, I want to talk to you about something that I was thinking about this afternoon, and I wanted to share it with you. Somebody suggested a documentary for me to watch. This afternoon, I watched it. It was on whales. But it was not a happy documentary. It was on the tragedy you may remember back in the early 90s that occurred at SeaWorld when a trainer lost her life. And I'm not going to talk about all the disturbing details of that, but it was an interesting documentary. A lot of stuff I learned I didn't know, and some I knew. One of the things that kind of stood out to me, it's interesting how sometimes we can be so unaware of what's going on around us and in our own lives. And one of the things that really jumped out to me was how there were all these warning signs. Now, the whale that had killed this young lady was a whale that had been known to be aggressive and to not always behave very well. I think that's kind of, you think about whales and behaving well, you're asking for a lot, right? But it seems like, and then, documentaries are often slanted one way or the other. People have agendas, but it does appear as though that people just kind of either overlooked or ignored or were unaware of the danger signs that were occurring. Because looking backwards, and life is often like that. I can look back in my life and there are things that happened to me in the moment seemed kind of surprising or shocking. But then when you look back over what happened prior, you're like, well, I should have probably realized that before and I didn't. I missed it. But that happens, right? And we can fall into the trap of not seeing warning signs either a couple of ways. We can simply just not be self-aware enough, not to be aware of our environment enough that we just don't see it. And there's moments in my life where I look back and I'm like, oh, I wish I had just paid attention. There are other times, however, when we become willfully ignorant of danger signs, when we just refuse to see it. And both cases are very dangerous. I'm not sure which one's worse. I think being willfully ignorant is in some ways worse, right? But the other one can get us in just as much danger. In Genesis chapter 4, we have such a situation where an individual is not paying attention to the warning signs in his life. You may remember that the text tells us, beginning the first couple of verses, that Adam and Eve have two sons, Cain and Abel. Cain, the older brother, is a farmer, and then you have Abel. He's a farmer too, but he's a farmer of livestock, a shepherd. And these two men, in the course of time, bring an offering to God. Abel of his livestock and Cain of the ground. I'll get that right in a minute. And God accepts Abel's because of the manner in which it's offered, and he doesn't accept Cain's. And I want you to notice again what he says in verse 6. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face fallen? If you do well, will you not be accepted?" Of course, that's a rhetorical question. If he does well, God will accept him. He just needs to do better. And then he goes on and he gives him a warning that if Cain had heeded it, Abel would have not died, right? But he says, if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door and its desire is contrary to you. You must rule over it. God's trying to warn him. There's some signs in his life that he is bent toward anger, and this anger is out of control. Now, later on, as we read, they're going to be out in the field one day, and he's going to take a rock, and he's going to kill his brother in a very brutal way. Why did that happen? Well, Cain couldn't control his anger, but Cain also missed the warning signs. And he didn't pay close enough attention to himself. Later in the book of Hebrews, now we're going to go all the way almost through the whole text, and we're going to go to one of the last books there, Hebrews chapter 2. Hebrews chapter 2, and I want us to catch what the writer is saying to us as Christians and giving us a similar warning as he did, as God did with Cain. And so Hebrews chapter 2, verse 1, he says, therefore, we must pay closer attention to what we have heard, lest we what? Drift away from it. For since the message declared by angels proved to be reliable, and every transgression or disobedience received a just retribution, how shall we escape if we, what? Neglect such a great salvation. We've been talking about, we bought some raised beds to put a garden at the house. And soon I'll be working on that this week. And if, Lord willing, the rains don't keep us from doing it, but we're going to plant seeds or plant plants in there. Now, the health of that garden will largely depend on how we tend it, what kind of effort we put into it. But if we neglect it, if we choose to do other things instead of doing the care that it needs, what's going to happen? It's going to become overcome with weeds. The plants aren't going to be trimmed like they need to. We're not going to treat the soil as we should. And our garden is going to suffer as a result, right? The same is true of us as Christians, right? If we neglect our salvation, our faith, our walk with God, we're going to suffer as a result of it. If we miss the warning signs that maybe we're in danger, we're going to suffer for it. And so what I want to do for the next couple of minutes is to talk about what are some warning signs that appear in our lives that are danger signs for us that we need to wake up and we need to pay attention. Now, I think it's interesting on a Sunday afternoon, the Sunday crowd that usually comes to Sunday afternoon are generally, and I'm not trying to be mean, I think it's true, is they're more dedicated folks. They've already shown that I'm going to put forth a little bit more effort in my faith and my walk with God. But all of us are susceptible to ignoring the signs that are in front of us. So I want to share just a few here. I'm sure that others could add to this list, but number one, I think a clear warning sign for us as Christians, and this is one I have seen over and over in the church, is that when one's attendance and involvement at worship and in other church activities begins to drop, begins to wane, when they no longer make worship a priority, or they no longer make Bible class a part. The way it generally goes is what? So we meet a few times a week. We have Bible classes Sunday morning. We have worship. And then we will have usually a p.m. worship. We have a Wednesday Bible class time and devotion. And then for those who can't, we have a Thursday morning. And so you can observe this over time. What's the first thing that generally drops off? Usually Sunday morning Bible study. Well, you know what? I need that little bit of extra rest today. I'm going to just sleep this one in, and it'll be okay. I'm going to show up for worship. And then the next week, there's another excuse. And after time, what happens? It becomes a habit. I just don't go to Bible class anymore. Well, how does that affect me? Number one, it's going to affect my understanding of the Word of God. I'm missing valuable nourishment. But it also does something to my spiritual awareness and my apathy. It brings apathy on and indifference. What happens if at work you begin to miss work activities? You get fired, right? What happens if we begin to miss church activities? Worship. Well, we're going to find ourselves drifting away. We're putting ourselves in great danger. Hebrews chapter 10, this may be one that you're familiar with, but Hebrews chapter 10, verse 24. The whole book of Hebrews is written with kind of one goal in mind, I believe, by the Hebrew writer, and that is to affect Jewish Christians to not give up their faith, to not neglect, what he says in Hebrews chapter 2, their faith. Because some had become neglectful, and some were in danger of drifting back to Judaism. So notice what he says in chapter 10. He says, "Let us consider how to stir up one another to love and good works, not neglecting," notice that word again, "to meet together, as is the habit of some." Now you notice there, the direct immediate context is not just worship. Now we apply it to worship, but he says meeting together. Is that the only time the early church met together? No, it wasn't. But he says in general, if you make it a habit to neglect your attendance and involvement, well, there's a danger here. And there's a warning sign you need to heed. He goes on to say, but encouraging one another, and all the more as you see the day approaching. For if we go, now notice this, we often don't read verse 26, and I think it's not good, because 26 brings in an impact to this passage. For if we go on sinning, what's the direct activity? Neglecting worship, Bible class, church activity. That's the context. So in other words, what it is to miss those things as a habit, a manner of life, that is a sin. Now, I think it's interesting, he puts manner, right? There are times when things come up. You got a surgery, you're at home, you can't come, right? But what happens? Well, if I don't quickly try to get back to worship, it becomes easier and easier to miss. And then what does it become? A habit, a manner of life. That is a sin. And he says, if we go on sitting deliberately, after receiving the knowledge of the truth, after we've been corrected, there no longer remains a sacrifice for sin. You have what? Fallen from grace. You didn't heed the warning sign. One big warning sign is when you start missing and you're not there for worship, you're not there for Bible class, you're not there for other church activities, then there's a warning light that should be going off in your head. Number two, when one begins to make excuses for sinful behavior, when he tries to excuse what he or she is doing in some way, when they know what they're doing is sin. I won't read the whole context, but in 1 Samuel chapter 13, isn't that what Saul is doing? You remember what happened? They win a battle, and he wants to make a sacrifice. And so he's waiting on Samuel to come to him. He gets impatient, doesn't he? And Samuel's a little bit late. Based on the time they were going to meet, he wasn't able to get there as quickly as Saul wanted him to. So what does Saul do? I'll just offer it. Notice, verse 11, Samuel says what? What have you done? And then what does Saul do? Well, he starts making excuses. When I saw that the people were scattering from me and that you did not come within the days appointed, then he decided to offer the sacrifice. What's he doing? He's trying to excuse sinful behavior. We make excuses for our sin. We're in grave danger. What should our response be? When we sin, and it happens to the best of us, we need to get up, own it, repent, and ask God for forgiveness and quit doing it. That's what got Saul into trouble. It will get us into trouble. We must not make excuses for our sin. Own it. Admit it. So when we begin to drop in our attendance at worship and other church activities, we're in danger. Number two, when we start making excuses for our sin, we're in danger. Number three, when we begin to build closer friendships and relationships with worldly individuals while allowing our relationships with our Christian family to become disconnected. I know it's a long one, but I think it's important. Paul says to the Corinthian brethren in 2 Corinthians chapter 6, do not be, what? Unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness? Or what fellowship has light with darkness? What accord has Christ with Belial? Or what portion does a believer share with an unbeliever? Now, what I don't think Paul is saying here is that we don't have friendships outside the church. That's how we make connections and lead the Bible studies. But when we look around and our closest friends are all worldly people, and when we look and we don't really have a connection with the church, again, we're in danger. We need to have close relationships with members of the church. Those worldly people, why do we need friends for support, advice in our lives, right? When we don't have any Christian friends, when we're not close with our Christian brethren, where do we go to for advice and support? We're going to the world. Now, is the world going to lead us to Christ? Or are they going to put wedges between us and Christ? Be careful with your worldly friendships. I'm not saying that any of these people have any kind of ill will. I don't think they do. But they don't think like we do. If they did, they would be in the church. They have a different motive in life. Be aware of that. Understand that. When you're struggling in your life, if you had a health issue, would you go to your hairdresser for advice? If you're struggling with your health, and Dr. Kevorkian, this will date me, a lot of the young people won't know who that is, but if Dr. Kevorkian opened up a clinic down the street, would you go to him for health advice? He was the guy that killed a bunch of people. All right? I'm dating myself. Nobody, I don't think anybody got that one. But we would be careful about that, right? We need to be careful about that in our relationships. Again, I'm not saying we can't have friendships with people in the world, but we need to understand where the limit on that is. And what should our goal always be with anybody in the world? We're trying to bring them to Christ. We've got to be careful because Satan's going to use them to pull us away from Christ. So there's a yo-yo match going on here. So be careful when you become disconnected from your Christian family. Number four, lastly, when our prayer life becomes stagnant and apathetic. James chapter 4, he says, you ask and do not receive. James 4 and verse 3. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly. To spend it on your passions, you adulterous people. Do you not know that friendship with the world is enmity with God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. Or do you suppose It is to no purpose that the scripture says he yearns jealousy over the spirit that it has that he has made to dwell in us. But he gives more grace. Therefore, it says, God opposes the proud, but gives grace to the humble. Submit yourselves, therefore, to God. Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. Draw near to God, and he will draw near to you. Cleanse your hands, you sinners, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. What's going on here? James is talking, writing to a group of Christians who've become very apathetic, have become very worldly thinking. And when they do go to God in prayer, it's not the prayer of faith. It's a prayer that a worldly person prays for. Now, if Joe, my next door neighbor, who has no affinity, no touch with the church, prays, there's a certain expectation. I don't expect him to pray a prayer of faith, right? He's not there yet. But a Christian, we need to consider our prayer life and the health of it. It is a direct symptom of a heart problem, of a spiritual problem. What are the warning signs that you and I need to look for? When our attendance begins to wane, when we're no longer geared toward being there and being active, that's a warning sign. Number two, when we begin to make excuses for our sinful behavior. Yes, we're going to sin at times, but the trap Satan will get us into is to begin to make excuses for it and to reason our way through, it's not that big a deal. Number three, when we are more friendly to the world than we are to the church, when we have disconnected ourselves. Number four, when our prayer life has become stagnant and apathetic, that ought to send off warning bells in our brain and in our soul that we are in danger. This afternoon, is there something going on that we need to pray together about? Is there some way we could help you, or are you? Do you have a desire to put Christ on in baptism? Is there some kind of need that we can help you with? In just a minute, we're going to sing a song of invitation. We invite you, encourage you, please come as together we stand and as we sing.